There's a specific kind of tired a lot of advisors carry and never say out loud. It isn't the tired of long hours. It's the tired of feeling like the place that's supposed to have your back is somehow sitting on the other side of the table. Today, I want to show you where that feeling comes from, because it's almost never what advisors think it is. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different. So treat this as a map, not a set of directions. If you've ever caught yourself restless in a good job at a firm full of people you like, this one's for you. We'll cover where the friction is generated, why it gets sharpest the day you resign, and what it's telling you. Start with the mechanism. It's simpler than it feels from the inside. As an employee advisor, you serve two sets of interests at once. There's the client, who you answer to in conscience, and there's the firm, which has its own products it wants led with, its own targets, its own owners to report to. Most days, those point the same direction, and you never feel the seam. Then a day comes when they don't. The approved list doesn't include the thing you actually think fits. The fee structure works better for the institution than for the family sitting across from you. And you feel it because you know exactly who you'd pick if the choice were only yours. Notice what's missing there. No villain, nobody has to behave badly for the tension to exist. That's why advisors describe the same feeling at firms with completely different cultures. The seam travels with the model, not with the name on the building, which means the question most advisors ask themselves is the wrong one. It's usually, what's wrong with me? Everyone else seems fine, so it gets turned inward and filed as burnout. Try a different question next time. Ask, whose interest am I being asked to put first right now? That moves the problem out of your character and into the structure where it lives. Paperwork is annoying. Misalignment is corrosive. There's a name for the second one, borrowed from other fields. Moral injury. The slow wear of being put in spots where doing right by the institution and doing right by the person in front of you don't line up. It was built in before you got there, and it'll be there for whoever sits in the chair after you. So, where does the structure come from? One question. Who owns what? At the big national firms and the banks, advisors are W-2 employees. The firm runs the platform, carries compliance, pays a share of production on a grid, and here's the load-bearing part, owns the client relationships contractually. At an independent broker-dealer, you're typically a 1099 contractor, keeping more of the revenue and carrying more of the costs. At an independent registered investment advisor, an RIA, you may own the business itself. The employee version buys you real things, brand, infrastructure, a compliance department carrying a burden that would otherwise be yours. It also hardwires the two masters problem, because the institution paying you answers to its own economics. The asymmetry first shows up in writing in your compensation. Deferred comp vests over years, and unvested balances are usually forfeited if you resign. Recruiting and transition packages are generally structured as forgivable loans against a promissory note. FINRA, the brokerage industry's regulator, has described recruitment incentives running as much as 2 to 3 times the prior year's commissions and fees, and its own guidance walks through an illustrative 9-year note. None of that is hidden, and none of it is misconduct. Retention tools are rational for any employer, and everybody who signed did sign. The structural point is narrower. That agreement was drafted and priced by one side and became binding at the moment you had the least bargaining power on the way in, when it looked like pure upside. Years later, the same paragraphs are the walls of the room. And this is where the feeling stops being a feeling and turns into paperwork. You built the relationships. The firm owns them. Where it applies, the framework governing a departure is the broker protocol, created back in 2004 by a few of the big firms to protect clients' privacy and freedom of choice. The official protocol text spells out exactly 5 pieces of information you may take, and only for clients you personally service: client name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. Anything past those 5 fields is prohibited. To be covered, you generally have to resign in writing to local branch management, leave the firm a copy of what you're taking, and both firms have to be signatories. That last part surprises people. The protocol is voluntary, and firms join and withdraw as they choose. More than 2,000 firms were on the administrator's list as of October 2025. If either firm in your move isn't a member, your employment agreement governs instead. Speaking generally, a departure dispute follows a pattern. If a firm believes an advisor took more than the rules allow or is soliciting in breach, the early move is often a court order freezing client contact, with the dispute resolved in industry arbitration rather than a public trial. That's the ordinary machinery any organization uses to enforce a contract protecting what it legally owns, which is the point. At departure, you and the institution are, for a moment, formal adversaries over the same relationships you spent years serving together. So no, the firm isn't the villain. Enforcing a contract you lawfully wrote isn't a wrong, and leaving for a model you prefer isn't a betrayal. One more point before I wrap up. Going independent changes the structure that produces the conflict, but it doesn't delete the trade-offs. What replaces it is ownership's workload, compliance responsibility, operating costs, being the person every problem rolls up to. The advisors who regret the move tend to be the ones who wanted better economics, but not a business to run. Plenty of advisors run the math and stay, and staying on purpose is a legitimate answer. This question is live all over the industry. Fidelity's advisor movement study found more than half of advisors, 56%, had considered switching firms within a 5-year window, with roughly 1 in 4 actually moving. Diamond Consultant's annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% over the year before. Feeling the seam doesn't make you broken or disloyal. Usually it just means you were paying attention. Before any of this becomes a decision, get a securities attorney in your corner who reads these agreements for a living. Most advisors don't have one, and that's the gap. If what I just described sounds like your last 2 years, we built a short assessment for this. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. 6 questions, and you'll know your next step. Name the structure before you judge yourself. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.